We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hanley. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley starts now.
Will the Bears lose to Detroit, and what is your predicted score?
I picked the Bears to win the game, but I have no faith in the pick, and I wish that Danny Trevathan was back, because I don't think he's great, but I think he's better than what they have, and maybe some of the issues they had lining up were a problem because they didn't have a guy there. But Christian Jones was on the helmet mic, so maybe that was a problem. Anyway, I did take the Bears, and I took them to win 20-17. I think the Bears can get 20 points. I think it's more likely they'll get the 17, but I think they could go 20. I think this is one of these games where the Bears could win it, or it could even be a blowout. I mean, I don't know if the Bears – I think the Bears – I don't think the coach has lost the team yet, and I think they're going to try to rally from last week, and I think it's a home game, and they played well at home. I went with the Bears.
This certainly is a glass half full question. Couldn't it be, why, you know, will the Bears win and what's predicted score? But no, off the Green Bay game, will the Bears lose? Because that's the mindset of the city right now.
Right.
They're not going to win. They are going to lose. And my question is, will Tariq Cohen have more carries than Josh Bellamy gets targeted? Because they seem to be in love with 15. And I would think that Dahl is going to overreact and there'll be a market correction. So now they're going to probably force feed Tariq Cohen to the detriment of Jordan Howard. 20-16, I had this score. 20 for the so the defense will rally and step up a bit and keep Matt Stafford in check, and you're going to hold them 20. But this Bears offense cannot score more than 16 points, just can't do it. So unless the defense actually scores a touchdown or two, they're going to be in trouble, and they're not going to even cover at home, and they will lose 20-16.
29th in total offense the Chicago Bears are this season. We know they can play some D, but 29th in total offense. So you've got to figure, how are you going to score points against a team that's 3-1 on the road this season? But what's the strength of the Chicago offense if there is one? The ability to run the football. Last week against the Cleveland Browns, the Detroit defense gave up over 200 rushing yards. Isaiah Crowell had a heck of a day, and that's nowhere near the offensive line or the running capabilities of the Chicago Bears. We talked about in the last segment, yards per play is a big-time metric when trying to evaluate team versus team strength. The Bears, yards per play offensively versus giving up on defense, is in the positive, whereas for the Lions, it's in the negative. This is a much closer game than anyone indicates. The question, Molly, comes down to what you were just talking about. Has John Fox lost the locker room? If these guys have checked out after that challenge last week, I'd be concerned about any situation involving the Bears. I don't believe that to be the case. I'll take Chicago 21-20.
Nice.
This line is about right. I'm wondering if there's a bit of an overreaction here, because Green Bay and Detroit, are they really that far apart? The Bears go from 5.5 to 6-point favorites, now to 3-point underdogs, both home games. The Bears' advantage is the defense. We understand that. But I agree with Mully. Danny Trevathan is a key. Now, normally I wouldn't overreact to an inside linebacker, but on this defense, you see it when he isn't out there for the team. Stafford's rolling. That team, that offense, averaging 27 points per game, 6 in the NFL. On the season, 17 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, a quarterback rating of 96. I hate that some sites are saying 89% of the tickets on Detroit.
Oh, boy.
All the Bears writers are on the Bears.
Squares.
I wouldn't put this game on my card. I wouldn't bet on it, but I've got Lions 23, Bears 19, Detroit barely covering.
I picked the Bears to beat Atlanta. I picked them to lose to Pittsburgh. I picked them to lose to Carolina. I picked them to beat Green Bay twice. So I've pretty much been wrong on every Bears pick all season. So I'm going to go against my gut, against my brain here, and pick the Bears to win.
Oh.
On Sunday,
you just
I'm all cattywampus. I don't know what's going on here with this Bears team, with the injuries, with the offense. Bears win 19-17. A lot of field goals for Connor Barth, I'm feeling, on Sunday.
Yeah, now that they brought a kicker in yesterday, he's going to
feel the heat. That's right.
Well, I need to know, because I'm sick. Joe, is that an official pick, Joe Fortenbaugh? Is that, or do we wait till 7:40? Is that part of the official picks, or we wait till 7:40?
7:40. We've been doing it seven seasons now. The official pick will come at 7:40.
I have it Lions, Lions cruising 30-17. Lions 30.
Oh boy,
Bears,
can I change
17.
Mine?
It's a great question, and so many of them were so good. In fact, all of them I learned something from, that if I mention one of them, I'm going to leave out all of them. And if I try to mention all of them, I won't remember some, and I'll regret that.
Should the Bears be monitoring the coaching hot seat list and move quickly if they expect multiple firings? And is there any way they launch Fox before the season's end?
Who are these Bears we speak of? I thought it was Ryan Pace's job to monitor. And if he's a GM of any worth, he already has a list and a top candidate to take over once he makes that move. But come on now. I mean, they've never fired a coach in season. They don't do that. So they're not going to fire John Fox and his staff. They're not going to launch anybody. They would have done it on Monday if they were going to do it. So, no, they're not monitoring the hot seat. If Brian Pace doesn't have a list together, then he ought to go too. So I don't think any of the above is happening. I think Ryan Pace has an idea. When he makes that move, he's going to, you know, who's going to take care of his quarterback, and that's how far the list goes.
This is one of these things that's around town, this idea that, you know, you got to move quickly. You got to get rid of this guy so that you're able to grab that first candidate. Let me tell you something. You're not going to go coax Jim Harbaugh out of Michigan because he's going to want a ton of money and he's going to want power. And the guy that hires him will have to be fired in order for him to take the job. Think about that. It's a Saban situation with Jerry Angelo. I'll come, but I'm in control of the roster. I'll basically have your job. That's not going to work out. So I don't think there's any coach out there that is such a great candidate that the Bears have to strike first. Because I don't think they're in it for the big-name guys. I think Ryan Pace has a few guys in the league that he knows, and one of them would get the job because they could work with Ryan Pace. So you're limited right there by who you're going to hire because you're keeping your general manager. You're not starting from scratch. So the general manager deserves a chance to hire a coach. I believe that. But it would be unfair not to let him. But you know what? Life's unfair. I think that whoever they're going to hire – Pete Carmichael Jr. is probably already in line if it were to happen. I just wouldn't get worked up about needing to hire him in order to get the big name guy, because I think the big name guy isn't coming here anyway. I don't think they'll launch Fox before season's end. I don't think they do that. I think the reason they're hesitating now is because they got to pay him $5 million next year.
Should they be monitoring the hot seat list? Yeah, absolutely. Every team should be doing that, and that includes the New England Patriots. Not because you're going to move on from Belichick, but you always want plan B, C, and D in place in the event of any sort of emergency. So, yeah, the Bears should be monitoring the market. In terms of John Fox and being launched before the season's end, it's not college football. College football, you got to move quick, A, to get a great candidate, and B, to get ahead of the recruiting cycle. You make these changes in January like the California Golden Bears did with Justin Wilcox, he's really late to National Signing Day. In the NFL, these guys take their time. It's like the Major League Baseball hot stove. No one's rushing to sign as a free agent. You're going to see what's out there. You're going to take the trips. You want to be wooed. You want to see the best situation. Let Fox figure it out for the end of the year at the very least, because the one thing you want, the most important thing for this organization right now, is going to be consistency at the quarterback position and developing Mitchell Trubisky. I got a rundown I'm going to give you guys later on offensive coordinators and how this thing plays out. But for right now, no need to rush it. Just work on your quarterback, make sure he's comfortable to the end of the year, and then reassess the situation.
What is the hot offensive name that teams are talking about that everybody's going to be after as soon as the season wraps up?
You know, the Josh. But you know, where it really comes into play, when you hire a head coach, he can start putting his assistants together.
Right.
So you don't want to be like waiting a week after the season ends to start your process. You don't want to be the last team to it. But yeah, there are guys out there that will be snatched up pretty quickly when staff start getting fired.
Right, but there isn't one guy that's above everyone else.
Cooter,
right? JBC,
Jim Bob.
James.
Yeah, there's issues there.
That would be a great story.
Good news for the Bears is a lot of these guys are going to be in the playoffs. Carmichael, Frank Reich, yes. Darrell Bevell, right. Josh McDaniels. Yep. They're not going to be in any rush to take their meetings.
At midway part of the season. Jesus.
Oh, that would be great.
You go from Trestman to Fox to McAdoo.
Yeah, why not?
Please, make that happen. At this point, I'm looking at six teams, and it's probably going to be a little more. There's usually, it feels like there's around seven teams. Cincinnati, Cleveland, Indy, the Giants, Tampa Bay, and probably the Bears. So I'm looking at six openings right now. They're not going down the road of Harbaugh or Gruden and all that money and all that power. But this is not how they operate. I'm not expecting it to happen. But yeah, they probably should act quickly instead of waiting weeks and weeks and weeks.
There's only one man for the job. I'm on the Cooter train. They need to bring in Cooter to Chicago, the young offensive mind to mold Mitchell Trubisky.
They tried to bring him in as the offense coordinator.
Well, they should
try
harder.
That's how he got promoted.
Bring in the Cooter. Let's go. And no, John Fox.
That sounds like something you should see your doctor yeah. about. I got the Cooter, Doc.
John Fox will not be fired before the season, also, just to clarify that. They don't do that in this organization. There's a lot of things they don't. There's a lot of things they don't do.
Does Deion Sims have the Cooter?
tough to get a straight answer on that one.
No, there are laws against it.
We'll talk to Big G about that at 7 o'clock, right? Listen, I'm confused by the whole situation. Of course, they should have fired John Fox on Monday. They should have elevated Vic Fangio. We could have then seen possibly Little Dow Loggins get the handcuffs taken off of him by John Fox and find out what kind of a play caller he really is. But, and we don't have time for it right now, but I don't want to forget. So, Molly, later on, we got to go over this. It feels like that was 5 or 6, 10 years ago. How many NFL head coaches right now have that power that you're speaking about, like with a guy coming in to take Ryan Pace's
job? Well, who's the number one guy?
Who's the number one guy?
Who's the number one coach?
Bill Belichick.
He's got all the power.
But he's like one guy, and he has a guy that he works with very closely that they've like protected and kept from going to other places. Nobody's got that anymore. I don't know that anybody can come in and say that they want it.
I think Jim Harbaugh has, what's his name, working with him, and he views him as his offense or his general manager.
What about Andy Reid and Sean Payton? How much power do they have?
Right.
This is a very important question.
Is Chris Dunn a bust, and when do you make that determination?
Yes, he is a bust, and I won't make that determination until I really have to, but I, in my mind,
just
I feel like
you literally
I,
just
see what I did there, but I don't think it's going to work out.
Well, if he's a bust, then Denzel Valentine's a bust, Bobby Portis is a bust, campaign certainly a bust. He's not in campaign territory yet. I haven't seen enough of him.
Ooh, he can't shoot, buddy.
Can't right. dance like that either.
Yeah. If you determine he's a bust, then the former first round picks who've been here for a little bit are also busts when they can't even get off the bench.
We can go player by player with that question if you'd like, and you'll hear a lot of me with the affirmative because I'm a yes guy.
Well, it's interesting. Luke Walton was asked about Lonzo Ball, and he said he's just a young guy. He's still growing. So, of course, he's still starting, and you have to look at it that way. I've got to see a full season of him before I make that determination.
But he's in his second year, and he's a lot older than Lonzo.
Right.
I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the weird windup that right. Lonzo has with his shot. But it looks like he's a guy that can't shoot.
If I had to make the determination today, he's a bust.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give it a year.
But he had a year.
I wasn't watching T-Wolves basketball last year. Thank you.
And I'm with you. I'll give it a year, too.
23 years old, and this is the first month of his second season, which just so happens to be with a second team, which just so happens to be with a team that, shall we say, isn't exactly overflowing at the cup with talent to make everyone
that's
around
harsh assessment.
Him, to make everyone around him look better. So
don't sleep on Hoiball, all right?
It's early. I mean, that's like Stephen A. Smith the other day already putting the bust label on Lonzo Ball. You're going to give him 1 month and you want to come out and start talking about that? I get there's a struggle. It makes sense. But in college, it's not like he went to a major program at Duke and week in, week out, he was playing NC, Wake Forest, Maryland,
but
all the big
ticket
items.
In college, it took him, and I know he was injured a couple times, but it took him 4 years, basically, to become a star. And he was the oldest guy drafted in the top 5 picks in the last 10 years. So it's... I know 23 sounds really young, but in the NBA, it's not.
It's an outlier, and it certainly raises some red flags. I would say that 1 month into year two with Team Two, I'd give it a little bit more pause, but you haven't seen a lot to get too excited about just yet.
Yeah, he's turning 24 in just a few months. Year two, one start in. I'm not going to say he's a bust, but I don't know what he does well, and I don't know what there is to get excited about.
You know, he's only played 86 games in the NBA. You have to give him a little bit more time, but no encouraging signs really at this point. I mean, I don't mean to be harsh.
No, I
don't want
to
completely write the kid off or anything like that. But
you didn't mean to be harsh?
No, never. Not me. Anybody but me would be harsh. 3.4 assists a game to 3.3 turnovers per game.
That's
this
you hope
season.
For better than that.
So he's about even there. Not as good as you'd hope, right? A couple steals per game, that's good. So he's, you know, playing the passing lanes, trying to jack up those stat numbers there. Apparently, he's not a bust yet. But, you know, when you take a guy this early like the Timberwolves did, and he doesn't play very much, even though Thibodeau has that reputation of not playing rookies, I think this is a little different because he was just so bad. So he just kind of became a throw-in now in this deal with the Bulls. And I don't want to completely write him off yet. I won't be harsh, like I said. But it does not look encouraging.
The Bulls wanted to draft this guy before. That's what's bad. I think you're going to find out tonight if he's a bust or not, okay? So who's... Seriously.
Tonight?
What?
Charlotte!
Who's
what?
Back in the lineup? Who's done...
Statement game.
Who's done being a dad for the day, okay? The great Holiday. Justin Holiday is back with the Bulls. If Justin Holiday starts ahead of him tonight, then he's a bust. The guy needs time. The guy should be playing every
Justin
possible
Holiday is like the best player on their team.
that they had no investment in, okay? No one. Listen, they as an organization, okay, all the way up to the top, okay, Captain Red Rear End himself wanted this guy, okay? So now they got to let him play. But if he's on the bench tonight in favor of Holiday, then he's a bust. We'll know tonight, 7 o'clock, United Center.
Wow. Be there. It's a specific analysis.
Yeah. Grab your tickets.
I'm tortured by this question.
Will Jake the Big Squirrel Arrieta get a contract of at least 5 years?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. What you heard from Scott Boras the other day was there are no five-year contracts out there, and he's trying to ignite the market. I don't think there is a five-year contract out there. There's certainly no six- or seven-year contract out there. So if it is 4 years, certainly the Cubs ought to be back on the phone saying, we have that money, and we have that contract printed up if you want to sign it today. If it's 5 years, they still have to think about it. And I still say give him a five-year with a two-year out, and then he can reevaluate 2 years from now if he thinks he deserves a bigger payday. But he's not getting 6 or 7 years. The market's changed, and his timing is off, and I think Scott Boras is a little desperate here. So a big squirrel may have nuts in the trees, but he's not going to have as much money in the bank.
I think that Jake will get a five-year deal. I don't think he's getting a seven-year deal. I think that's what the holdup was with the Cubs all along. He wants a seven-year deal. That's absurd. He's not getting seven. Will he get six and offer it six? I think he'll get a five. But if the Cubs could have him for four, it'd be great. But I don't know. I kind of think that ship has sailed a little bit, even without all the love and free agency. I think teams... This is the initial assessment. It's interesting that no one's knocking down the door to try to get to him. But at the same time, I think when people sit back and look at the market, there are a lot of teams that need pitching, and I think Jake will get at least 5 years. I don't think he'll settle for less.
32 years old at the start of the season, yep. So there's precedent here. Zach Greinke was already 32 years old when he signed that six-year, $206 million deal. The question is, are there comps between Greinke and Arrieta? Maybe to an extent, but it's not so much will he get a five-year deal, because I believe he will. Should he get a five-year deal?
Right.
You're already starting to see a drop-off in production from the mammoth season 2 years ago. Where's this contract going to be 3 years from now, 4 years from now, and in that fifth year? And is that going to hamstring your organization? I saw it firsthand with the Giants and Matt Cain. They couldn't even get the guy on the field, and that's $20 million a year. Now, if you've got cash to burn, like the Red Sox, like the Yankees, like the Dodgers.
Like the Cubs.
That's all right, like the Cubs. But do you want to burn that cash knowing 3-4 years down the road, the return on this investment isn't going to look very positive?
Last year, nobody got a five-year deal. None of the starting pitchers out there. Now, it wasn't a good group. Rich Hill got the biggest deal. at 3 for 48. And as Joe just mentioned, he mentioned Greinke. Go back to 2015. It's a long list of starters that got five-year deals. Price and Greinke got the monster deals. Cueto, Zimmerman, Samardzija, Chen, Leek, Kennedy. All those guys got five-year deals. But I think we've seen a change here. I don't know if teams want to go into the penalty, go into that tax for a starter in the middle of your rotation. I think he is going to get a five-year deal, something closer to Zimmerman and Cueto. They got around just over $100 million. Cueto, 5 for 130. I think he ends up getting it because he's going to get one of the two largest contracts with starting pitchers. It's himself and Yu Darvish. He'll get it, but I don't know if it's the monster payday he was looking for.
He'll definitely get 5 years. I mean, a lot of teams out there need pitching. You just look at some of the matchups. I mean, Boston was throwing Drew Pomerantz out there as their number two starter in the American League Division Series last year. So everybody needs pitching. A lot of teams have money. And I think the fact that one of the things that Scott Boras, I think, was alluding to the other day, it's hard to follow all the squirrel analogies and everything, but the fact that Jake, even though he has been declining year by year in the regular season, still very good in the playoffs, even last year. So I think that bears very heavily into the contract that will be given out. It'll be given out by a team who thinks they can get in the playoffs and use a guy who is the big squirrel with all the nuts in his tree that's been there before, won World Series games, played really well in the playoffs. I think that he will get 5 years, and he'll probably get about 140 mil.
If he gets that kind of a deal, a five-year, $140 million deal, I think it's a team like the Brewers, a team like the Philadelphia Phillies.
Five years, 140?
Yeah, for a team that thinks they're on the come. He's gonna put some rear ends in some seats. He'd be the one or two on those staffs. And, you know, they made a big deal, both, I think we heard it from Theo and we heard it from Bazio on this show, about how influential Jake is on that clubhouse and on that pitching staff, and how he takes care of himself. Some people have different opinions on how he takes care of himself or doesn't take care of himself. But that's a big deal. If he's going to a playoff team like the Dodgers, like the Cubs, like the Cardinals fancy themselves to be, then it won't be a five-year deal. It'll be a four-year deal around $100 million.
No, that's a good question.
Would you vote Anthony Rizzo ahead of Chris Bryant if you had an MVP vote?
Wow, that is what happened here in Chicago. I believe Jesse Rogers from ESPN and Mark Gonzalez of the Tribune both voted in their MVP. You know, you don't vote just one guy. They both had Anthony Rizzo ahead of Chris Bryant. I think Chris Bryant is the better player, but I think Anthony Rizzo is, you know, he's like, I don't want to say he's the better person, but Anthony Rizzo is very charismatic in the way that he operates in the clubhouse and certainly in the way that he helps people off the field. Not that you know, Chris doesn't, but he doesn't have that sort of charisma. So I think it's interesting that insiders feel that he's the more influential player, because he probably is in terms of that leadership role and all that other stuff. But in pure baseball terms, Chris Bryant is the best player on that team. And if I were voting MVP, I would have to go with the best player, and I would have to have Chris Bryant ahead of Anthony Rizzo. I know that Chris did not have as great a year as he did the year before, but I think, again, you can't have an all-star game without that guy in it. And I think that he's someone that should be in the MVP voting on a yearly basis, too. I think he's that good a player.
You know, Z, the Mark Bowman, the Braves beat writer who voted Chris Bryant, the only man to vote Chris Bryant, give him a first-place vote for MVP. He should be your new hero, right? He's a metrics guy. Had his spreadsheet out, had his weighted runs created plus.
I thought all the media out of Cincinnati would vote Bryant MVP, since he's the only one that he actually produces against.
Yeah, every time they see four home run games. But, you know, that was interesting, because this guy put a spreadsheet together and he makes an argument. And if you're purely a metrics guy, then the argument holds up. But if you're an eye test guy, boy, that's a tough call, because Rizzo has to go out there every day. Now, Chris Bryant played hurt for a lot of the second half, or maybe the last third of the season.
Very long time.
Didn't Wilson Contreras have pretty much the same stretch there of 2 or 3 weeks where he carried the team offensively? And I don't see him on any of the, 1 through 20 on any votes for MVP. But Chris Bryant did have a 2-week stretch there when the Cubs did separate themselves from a 500 team and from the Brewers and the Cardinals and got control of the division. It was a little late, but they finally did it. But to answer the question, I mean, I just for this season alone, I would have said Anthony Rizzo, because I think
He had the better year of the two.
The better year is out there.
He was the greatest leadoff hitter in the history of the game.
Well, and you know what? He did. He took one for the team for 2-3 weeks, too. I mean, and I get it. Chris Bryant's first 13 home runs were solo shots because no one in front of him was on base when he was hitting balls out of the ballpark, and that certainly hurt his RBI total. So this year alone, I would not go metrics. I would just go eye test. And, you know, it's interesting that someone can make a case that he's actually MVP of the league.
And that's the question. How do you want to weight the characteristics that apply when evaluating an MVP? If you want to go metrics and you want to use sabermetric stats like WAR, you're going to look to a guy like Chris Bryant because by far and away, he has a significant edge.
Sure.
But it's an MVP award. It's not the most outstanding offensive player. It's not defensive player of the year. It's MVP. And when you talk value, all elements have to be brought into the equation. And I think Mully, Hanley, you both hit it the nail on the head. The leadership qualities, he appears to be the face of the franchise. Anybody from out of market like myself who sees the Cubs on TV, it always is a focal point on Rizzo. You just get that feeling from outside of town that he is the guy. I can absolutely see this. I'd give a slight edge to him as well.
Yeah, there's no debating. This is Anthony Rizzo's team. But again, it goes back to how do you define the MVP? Do you define it as the best player or the most valuable player to that specific team? I define it usually as the best player on the team. So I'm going to go to Chris Bryant here. He was down in home runs, down in RBIs, and 29 fewer than in 2016. And that could be, of course, because of the guys in front of him. They didn't have a leadoff man all year. But as Brian mentioned, a lot of the numbers, batting average, on base, slugging, if you want to dig deeper into sabermetrics, all very close to what he did in 2016. Now, I would not have given him a first-place vote. That's not the question. The question is Rizzo or Bryant. I also think third base is more valuable than first base. It's less replaceable. So I would give my Cubs MVP vote to Bryant.
It's absolutely Chris Bryant. I mean, and feel free to jump in here. We're great on time. This is fantastic
for me. The 6-5 works better than the 5-5.
We're killing the clock right now in a good way. What is one thing that Anthony Rizzo does better than Chris Bryant? One thing on the baseball field.
Leadership. He's better
it's
in the
very
clubhouse.
Yeah. It's intangible.
But he's he does do that.
He gets on base less. He's not as good of a defender.
I'm a big Chris Bryant.
He's not as versatile.
I think Chris Bryant's the best player.
How well did Chris Bryant play defense this year? Did he regress from his MVP year?
He absolutely regressed.
He regressed in every way.
But Anthony Rizzo is literally a negative defender. As much as you know, Dustin wants to tout him up as the next great, you know.
Didn't he win a Gold Glove
superstar?
Last year?
The Gold Glove is
I'll cover the cost. Send him the Puffs Plus with lotion down to your guy down in the okay? I'll cover the shipping.
You boys
in your metro.
Nothing like
okay,
Way That Runs Creative Plus is a Friday night right there, buddy.
WRC Plus, let's go.
So you say that
it's like porn for
that
baseball
Anthony Rizzo
metrics,
does nothing better than Chris Brown. What about leadoff? Can we go with that one?
Okay, because
he's the greatest leadoff hitter of all time.
He's even better than Ricky Henderson at leading off. I forgot about that. I'll give you the leadoff thing. But other than that, it's Bryant across the board.
Again, it's a one-year, one-season award. This year, I watched every Cubs baseball game. Anthony Rizzo was the better baseball player this year than Chris Bryant. Will Chris Bryant have a better career than Anthony Rizzo? The answer is probably. But this year, Anthony Rizzo was the better ball player. I don't understand how Chris Bryant could have gotten a first place vote for MVP this year. That gentleman should be expelled from, you know, there's a guy around here that can't go to press boxes, okay? This guy should have to sit on his couch. He should have to sit on his couch for making such an asinine vote. Okay, that's a terrible vote.
You're in the
book
now.
That's like Clark Kellogg. And God bless Clark Kellogg and God bless Northwestern basketball. But Clark Kellogg picked Northwestern to be in the Final Four. Okay, Clark should no longer speak on CBS television about college basketball after making that kind of a prediction.
Shouldn't we at least wait and see if the Cats are back in the tournament?
Could appreciate a ridiculous hot take like that, Dustin, it should be you.
And I'll bet everything I have in my pocket, all $25, that we have Clark Kellogg on in March.
Friend of the program.
That's right. Can I ask you a question, Dustin? And I mean this sincerely. You said that Anthony Rizzo had a better season than Chris Bryant.
Correct.
Are you basing that on Anthony Rizzo's previous seasons and how Anthony Rizzo did? Are you basing it?
Just what I saw.
But your judgment of Chris Bryant is colored by the fact that he had an MVP season last year and they won the World Series. He was the centerpiece of the team a year ago.
No, Dexter Fowler wasn't.
You're holding him to a standard based on previous performance, not
just like
based
we hold, just on, like we hold Jake Arrieta to a higher standard. You're right about that. Absolutely. I'm not saying you're wrong. But again, remember, Chris Bryant was the National League MVP last year, but Dexter Fowler was the Cubs MVP.
Hey, here we go.
I think that idea really showed its ugly head this season.
But that's what I'm getting. That's what I'm driving at. Are you using that basis to evaluate Anthony Rizzo over Chris Bryant, or are you saying that Anthony Rizzo was the better player this season? Are you comparing those two?
I don't know. Honestly, I hate to say I don't know, but in my head and what I saw,
just what you saw, he was better.
He was better.
But again,
more clutch.
I think the Dexter Fowler comparison
that blue single
is a good
against
one
Washington
because.
That's more than Chris, that's
was
more than
your
Chris Bryant
team
was doing.
MVP, right. But Chris Bryant was the league MVP. You made that differentiation. So are you doing it again?
I could be.
Okay.
I'm
not saying you're wrong to do it. I'm just saying, I think with Chris Bryant, this guy was the minor league player of the year. He was the rookie of the year. He was the MVP. He wasn't as good last year as he had been. The forward progress it's not like he fell off. It wasn't like he was bad, but we saw him get better and better and better, and maybe even out, maybe because of injury, maybe because of, you know, the lack of rest, whatever it was, married in the offseason. You know, there's a lot that went on in that kid's life. I thought he had a great year.
It's also less noticeable when Rizzo goes through struggles. We know it right away when we see Chris Bryant having a rough couple of weeks. And I think part of this guy's vote was there was not a standout pick for NL MVP. There are a few guys that you could have gone, and he's just like...
It was the closest race ever, and you wound up with one guy in a losing team over another guy in
Joey
a losing
Votto
team.
Joey Votto. I mean, good Lord.
That's pretty interesting.
You know what gets lost in some of the shuffle here? Mark Bowman voting Bryant number one. This is why so many people are unwilling to accept the analytical movement, because a guy comes out with this vote, and it's not a knock against Bryant, but he's not the NL MVP this year.
No, he's not.
He's not. He doesn't stack up with the guys at the top, and that's all right.
Right.
That's all right. But you've got a guy using fancy terms, and I'm as big an analytical guy as anyone, but you got a guy using fancy terms that a lot of people don't understand, and he's trying to justify something that to everyone seems like such a farce. It seems so
far-fetched. The guy didn't even make the All-Star team.
Exactly. I mean,
well, that's ridiculous.
Exactly.
Right, but he didn't, and now you're going to make the case that he's the MVP of the league.
And it's difficult to convince people to buy into this if they're not into the analytical movement because of votes like this.
All right, that is the 6 at 5. 312-644-6767. Would you vote Anthony Rizzo ahead of Chris Bryant if you had an MVP vote? Will the big squirrel get a contract of at least 5 years, Jake Arrieta? Is Chris Bryant a bust? Well, how long do you wait until you say Chris Dunn is a bust? Should the Bears be watering that coaching hot seat? And do you want Fox gone before the season's end? And will the Bears lose to Detroit? That's not a positive way of putting it. Not will they beat them, will they lose to them, and what's your predicted score? 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Hanley on the Score.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.